another exciting episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast. I'm your host, Burl Love, editor of the Cincinnati Enquirer, and with me in the studio today, not one, but two of my colleagues, David Weissong, our trending news editor, and Casey Sloan, one of his star reporters on the trending team.
Keyword star.
Star. Superstar. You guys are here with me because we have a super cool guest today that you told me we got to get this person because this is just a great story. And I'm talking about a former WLWT sports anchor that left the market, decided that, you know what, this little hobby I have with cooking, I'm going to run with it. And she ends up on Next Level Chef.
Crazy. Yeah. Absolutely wild.
And I'm talking about the one and only Elise Jessie, who will be in studio with us shortly. So we're going to find out everything that happened on this show that she's sworn
that she's allowed to talk.
That she's sworn to secrecy to talk about. I had not really paid attention to that show too much until your story ran about her actually being on it. It's a Gordon Ramsay show.
Yeah. Anything with him is going to be entertaining. He knows how to make good TV, for sure.
Yeah, for sure. So we're going to get the download on that. But before we bring in Elise, I wanted to talk to you guys about a little bit of unanticipated exposure one of your videos got. So I'll set the stage, and then you can kind of tell me what happened next. So as your team is wont to do, you will go out and do some man on the street videos. I bet you a lot of our listeners, unless they're following us on TikTok or Instagram or something like that, might not even stumble across them. But you actually went out on the streets of Cincinnati.
Downtown. It's always interesting.
Yeah. You never know you're going to see downtown. And asked which of the two Super Bowl halftime shows that, you know, people were going to watch, whether it was going to be the official one with Bad Bunny or the alternative programming one by Turning Point.
Yes.
Featuring Kid Rock and Friends.
Yes.
So take it from there.
Yeah. So, we were doing this Super Bowl video and I decided last second, I was like, you know what? Halftime show's a hot button issue. We're going to get something funny if we ask people about this. Casey normally goes out with me, and then one of our other reporters, Hadiza, normally goes out too. But this time, BB went out. She's another one of our reporters. She went out for the first time, and it was a very interesting welcome for her because we had some wild characters. Absolutely wild
characters this time.
Yeah, some guy did a cartwheel. There are some people just spewing some wild answers. And we did a man on the street video, full length, 3 minutes, and it did fine. But there's this one guy, I was like, man, this moment was so good. I have to break it out on its own. And I asked him, which halftime show are you watching? And he looks at me serious. He's like, the Backstreet Boys. And I was like, if you don't watch the man,
not one of the choices.
If you don't watch my man on the street videos, I let them know ahead of time. Like, I'm gonna be a little bit of a smart aleck here, so it's not gonna be anything crazy, but I might be a little mean. And I'm like, that's news to me. I don't know if this halftime show. He's like, yep, I saw it on Good Morning America this morning.
Because in defense of this poor, unsuspecting victim of your man in the street videos, they probably were conflating halftime show with Super Bowl commercials.
Yes.
They were dropping, you know, the ones that were released before.
And there was
a
segment on Good Morning America about the Backstreet Boys commercial.
So that person actually didn't make that up.
No,
he's got a little snippet confused of the Backstreet Boy commercial.
Yes. But yeah, I just played along with him a little bit. I asked him what his favorite song was. He said, I Want It That Way. And I started singing, I Want It That Way. Hopefully that's fair use.
You know, I was going to make a joke about your singing and how, you know, you could sing the whole song and no one would really care. But no, you actually can sing, David. I was impressed.
Really?
With you.
Yeah. I do not think
we should do a duet. duet sometime.
It's those years of being in my church choir as a kid.
Yeah, you do on the White Lotus video. You and Rasputin both.
Yeah, that's true. That's true. That was pretty wild too. But yeah, so I put that out there
so
on its own.
You just popped that video out there of this Backstreet Boy moment you two shared and then didn't think twice about it.
Yeah. And then it started taking off, getting a bunch of comments like, yes, yes, I want Backstreet Boys. Yes, yes. People tagging them. We got a comment from one of the singers, Kevin, just with like a laughing emoji. I thought that was cool enough.
One of the Backstreet Boys singers?
Yeah, he commented just like a laughing emoji and a heart. And I was like, oh, that's cool. And I texted BB right away.
Can I confess something right now?
Yeah.
I don't think I could name one Backstreet Boy.
No. I can't either.
Now, wait a minute. Wait.
Are you kidding?
No, wait. Let me think for a minute. Is Joey Fatone
a Backstreet Boy?
That's NSYNC. Oh,
he's NSYNC.
That's
NSYNC. Okay.
I will say I favored NSYNC as a kid as well, but I mean.
Because you had NSYNC.
That's what I'm saying. That was my point, too.
And then no offense to our good friend Nick Lachey, 98 Degrees and the Backstreet Boys were sort of like.
I mean, I think it was.
They didn't reach NSYNC levels of popularity.
I would say Backstreet Boys was right behind them.
You think so?
They got. So what I've learned over the past couple days is they were offered the halftime show back in the day. But they said they'd rather do the national anthem for the Super Bowl. So they've been.
Really?
That
seems like a career.
Yeah, why would you want to do that?
Dumb choice by
them,
for sure.
Yeah. Defining moment
And I will say I did not confirm that fact. So I'm sorry if that's incorrect, but that's what I've been told. And I've seen some videos, people saying that as well. But they've been big enough for sure. I think they were like probably like. NSYNC 1A, Backstreet Boys, like right behind them. They got some hits up there for sure. But yeah, I post that. I get that comment, think that's cool enough. And then there's this podcast, this 90s podcast that commented on it. They randomly tagged me the next morning and be like, they're like, David Weissong, you started a revolution. And I was like, okay, what is this? I click on the video and at first I just like see myself again. I was like, what are you talking about? And then it goes into the Backstreet Boys ad. I'm like, oh. The Backstreet Boys posted our video and it blew up. They have 6 million followers. Mm-hmm. So
how many views did the video get from the Backstreet Boys reposting?
Our original one got like over 300,000, but their video, which takes our clip, mixes in their commercial, mixes in the Good Morning America segment, has me singing into their singing. So my new flex is that I've sang with the Backstreet Boys.
It's pretty amazing.
Their video has 1.2 million views.
So 1.2 million people have heard you sing.
Yes, unfortunately.
That was pretty good. That was good.
Thank you.
He's more of a singer than I am. he's more of a singer than I am.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
That is incredible. Well, I'm going to, you know, Casey, we're going to have to like have a succession plan for David because I think this is going to launch him into stardom of some
American Idol or something.
His britches are going to get too big for the Cincinnati Enquirer.
I will say, now that I know that you can't name a Backstreet Boy, your response when I texted you over the weekend makes sense now. Because I texted my team right away. BB's like, oh my gosh. And he just hits me with a... LOL. Oh my god.
Oh, that's better. I thought I totally dadded you with like the thumbs up.
Oh my gosh.
You might as well.
I love those TikToks with like, you know, people your age that like send a text to their parents like, I just got this killer new job and I'm gonna be making six figures and I'm moving. Thumbs up.
Exactly.
That's literally my dad. Literally.
No, in my defense, I was busy, man. I had a lot of
it. It was a weekend. I typically don't text you guys on the weekend.
I'm glad
you
did. That's amazing. So and what a segue. Because now we can go from your social media stardom.
Not quite as big of a star as our guest here.
It's time now to bring in our special guest, Elise Jesse. As promised, special guest time on the That's So Cincinnati podcast. In studio with us today, Elise Jesse. Welcome to the podcast.
Hi, thank you for having me.
Yeah, we're excited to have you.
Should we call you Chef?
Yes, chef. I don't know. I feel like you kind of have to earn that title with culinary school, right? I don't know. I'm on the fence about it. They called me chef there, though. Really? So, sure.
Then, yeah. Yes, I think so. Chef Jesse, Chef Elise, which Ooh. One?
Okay, Chef Jesse's fine.
Okay.
Yeah, CJ.
I love it. I love that we're just coming up with nicknames.
Yeah. So, yeah, can you? You obviously are known around Cincinnati for your sports reporting, but how did you kind of get started in the cooking world?
I've been cooking for a really long time, but I call myself the closet cook because I didn't I didn't put it out there in the world because, you know, in sports as a woman, like one of the biggest things that they'll say to you if a viewer, a fan does not like what your report is or if their team was doing horrible, usually their response is tell her to go back in the kitchen and make a sandwich. Usually my thing would be like, don't tempt me with a good time. I will certainly do that. But I just kept it like I don't want to compromise my credibility in this space. So I just kept it behind me. And then finally, a year and a half ago or so, I just decided, you know what? I don't care what anybody says. I'm just going to start showing people one of my biggest passions. And it was actually a year ago. I was at Radio Row for Super Bowl 59. And I was interviewing all of the biggest stars. And then I brought a cookbook with me. And I would go back to my hotel room and I'd be reading cookbooks at night. And I just decided I'm going to go full throttle in this. And did.
How did it first take off? Was there one video that just like catapulted you to cooking stardom?
You know what's weird is that my hard-boiled egg combinations really kicked that off, which is so weird. But I just started exploring more recipes. And I think it was 5 months after I began posting is when the director with Next Level Chef actually approached me on Instagram.
Oh, wow.
And asked me if I'd be interested. And I was sitting on the couch with my husband and I go, look at this scam. I'm getting scammed. And he goes, do not give them any of your information.
Yeah.
But the next day she had sent me 2 more emails leading up to that. And so I said, okay, I'm just going to explore this and see what it is.
Yeah.
And it led to cooking with Gordon Ramsay.
Yeah, that's wild.
Yes. You know, I would have never thought that you were actually conscious of letting it be known that you like to cook in your profession because of what you said, you know, that's, I would have never crossed my mind. So you really wanted to keep that on the down low because you didn't want to invite that, you know, archaic criticism that you mentioned.
Yeah. Well, my first job was in Great Falls, Montana. And I don't think I've ever actually put this story out publicly.
Oh, so we have a scoop today.
Yeah. Here we go.
Let's hear it.
So Great Falls, Montana, I was a sports anchor and reporter. And our sports director at the time, there's a lot of turnover because it's a small market, right? Mm-hmm. He was leaving and I go to one of my bosses and I say, I want to put my name in the hat for the sports director position. He was like, listen, no one cares what you have to say. They only care what you look like. We just like to look at you on TV and anything else you say doesn't matter. So from then on,
and we're not talking 1960-something. We're talking this was like
2013.
Yeah.
But it's so crazy because 5 days after he said that, the GM in Cincinnati called me and he goes, the first question he asked me was
at WLWT.
Yes. He says, what does credibility mean to you? And I said, it means everything. That's the only thing that really matters in journalism. And he goes, well, I like the way that you approach it. So we want to come and we want to interview you. And I said, okay. Sounds good. Mm-hmm. Let's do it.
Let's get out of Great Falls.
Yeah. Get me out of here.
Yeah. I'm sure it was beautiful out there, though.
It was gorgeous.
All the people from Montana right now are like, that is not our state.
The people in Montana and the scenery in Montana is absolutely gorgeous. It reminds you how small you are.
Yeah.
It's just, it's gorgeous.
How long were you there?
A year and 10 days.
You have it down to the day.
No, I did not. It was also very cold, you guys. It was also very cold. We thought 17 degrees was warm.
Yeah, I went out there for my 10th dating anniversary, and we just missed a snowstorm, like literally the week before, and it was like late May.
Yeah. I think they said that it would snow in July, and they would not be surprised whatsoever.
No, thank you.
It was crazy.
No, thank you.
So we should just back up and do the origin story very quickly, since we kind of touched into that. You are from Cincinnati, West Sider.
Yes.
Oak
Hills. Born and raised. You've done your research.
I did the research, yeah. And I think a lot of people don't realize if you are in journalism, you want to be a reporter, whether it's, you know, whatever platform, it's not uncommon to have to leave the market because this is, it's not a huge market, but it is a destination market for those of us in this profession. Yeah. It's very competitive. You know, there's four TV stations here doing local news. Mm-hmm. There's a lot, there's larger cities that don't have that. So that's where you went to find your professional fortune.
Yes.
Out west.
Yes. Went out there to cut my teeth and I was prepared for it. I was ready to leave home. I knew that I had to leave in order to do what I ultimately wanted to do. Making a cool 16K a year covering the rodeo, six-man football. It was a great time. Yeah, it was a lot of work. But, I mean, that's where you have to go to make all of your mistakes and learn and also be self-sufficient in every way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I can empathize with that. I graduated 2018, then worked in Chillicothe, was making 26K a year.
So look at you. Okay.
Up. Yeah, I was raking in the dough for sure.
At least you got to stay in Ohio, though.
Yeah, that's true. It's true. But I was commuting because I still lived in Cincinnati. So that was brutal. Brutal, but
you are such a Cincinnatian that you couldn't even move to Chillicothe. You had to stay here and commute.
And I knew I wasn't going to be in Chillicothe that long, so
you just had a hunch.
Yeah just a little hunch. Yeah.
So talk a little bit about you. You came back to Cincinnati, the triumphant return home, and you're covering sports.
Yeah.
And you've always loved sports.
Yes.
And you're covering the Bengals.
Yes. And I got to work with George Vogel, who I interned with. I interned at Channel 5 also. And when I was an intern, I would call the front desk and I would ask if George was working or not. And if he wasn't working, I would not come in for my internship. I'm like, sorry, like this is a free internship anyways. I'll be coming in if George is there.
From the best.
Yes, exactly. So I stuck with him and then coming back was really cool. I was on the morning show for the first, I think it was 9 months. Mm-hmm. And then I was volunteering my time to help them produce Sports Rock, which was the sports show that would air on Sunday nights, a half hour sports show. And then I finally got a break there as the weekend sports anchor and held that position for almost 7 years. And it was just, it was fun. I think the 2015 season was one of the most fun years to cover the Bengals in TV because they started out 8-0. They won, or they were trying to win their first playoff game. And then that wild card matchup with the Steelers was insane. And
their first playoff game under Marvin Lewis.
Yes. 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 Let's be specific.
Yes. Let's be
very specific. Yes. But that was just one of the most fun seasons covering the team for me, at least in TV. So it was, and one of my favorite aspects of covering sports in Cincinnati is actually the high school football programs like St. X, Moeller, of course, so Kills Elder. I'm a true Westsider, so I loved going to the football games and being able to watch the up-and-coming football players and the coaches. High school sports is the best. It's my favorite.
It's big here.
Yeah, yeah.
We invest a lot in it, as you know, all the news sources do.
Yeah.
I used to love watching Sports Rock, by the way.
Yeah. It was a fun show. Yeah. It was great. I remember George the first time I was really nervous and he goes, listen, if you don't, they're not going to know that you're BSing. It's okay. And then I think it was Andy Pierce. He goes, yeah, listen to George. He's the master of BS. He's been doing it for 30 years. It was great. They're awesome.
No, I remember I was working for the News Record at the time, the college paper at UC, covering the Bearcats. I remember seeing you and some of the other professional sports reporters around, thinking you guys were like so cool back then. So
I've never been cool, but thank you so much. I appreciate that.
Well, at some point, you decided, okay, I'm going to like not be apologetic that I like to cook. Mm-hmm. It's not going to be a, you know, death sentence to my career if I admit that I enjoy being in the kitchen. What was there any like, you know, apprehension on your part? Not because of the professional aspects of it, but just there's a lot of people that think they can cook. You know, it's hard to break through. So like the fact that you broke through, and we need to talk about like you got to spill some tea on Gordon Ramsay. We need to know all about him. But what was your goal? What were you trying to?
Yeah, sure. So before I started posting, I would send, because people would ask me, do you know how to make, one of my friends was like, I'm really afraid to make chicken because what if it's not done? I don't know if it's done. Mm-hmm. And so I would just set up my phone on my countertop and it would be like a 15, 20 minute unedited video showing her how to cut it and how to season it and then cook it. And then she goes, will you just start an account already? Like, just start posting it. Really saying, will you just edit this down to 20 seconds
and then write out the recipe for me?
Yes.
Yeah, we need some production here.
Brevity, bring the flair, please. Bring the editing, please. And I was terrified to start an account at all because it's such a personal side of me. And I feel like I'm very, it's opening up the side of me that I was scared to show so many people for so long. So it's a very vulnerable position at first. And I thought, well, I'm just going to post because no one's going to see it. There's enough culinary content out there that this is going to get buried. Mm-hmm. Like my one friend is going to see it. It's not a big deal.
Little did you know. Little did you know.
That was not the case. My prediction was very wrong. Mm-hmm. And then it's just the big goal for me was to just show mainly busy people, busy moms, busy college students, meals that they could make that were healthy, that would help them feel good the next morning, that they enjoyed eating. Mm-hmm. And it was quick to pull together. It didn't need to be fancy. You didn't need all these fancy tools. Just whip it up. Make sure the flavor is good.
Mm-hmm. Once things start taking off, did you come up with kind of like a content strategy? I know we've talked to other content creators. Some people just post, like they take time and make sure like things just post when they think it looks good. Some people post 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 times a day. So do you have anything like that?
No, you guys, like I literally I set my phone up with what I'm making for the day for my family. Yeah. I do not plan it out. I'm not trying to follow trends. I'm just like, we're making chicken salad today. It might suck. It might be good. I don't know. We'll find out together. So I don't plan it out because I feel like it's more authentic if I'm just showing you what I'm doing.
Yeah.
And I'm just allowing people a glimpse into my kitchen and into my day. Yeah. So that's how I approach it.
What was it like seeing that growth on your Instagram? Because you said you'd only been posting for about 5 months before Gordon Ramsay's people reached out to you. So what was that like? Like, how are you feeling?
Well, I barely had a following when they reached out, which is initially why I thought I was getting scammed.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yes. I don't even know how many I had. But then it started taking off. And then I thought, oh, I'm glad I haven't shown my kids on this account. I didn't anticipate that, but I'm glad I didn't post them. That was my first thought. But then it was just kind of getting used to all of the followers. And, you know, people will let you know if your recipe is not good. They will come and make sure that they let you know that it is not good. So it better be good if it's going out. That was a big difference. I enjoy the community because they'll send me DMs and ask me different questions about what they can sub and if they can switch out different ingredients and how long to bake. And if they're having trouble, they send me a DM and we have a conversation about it. So it's like, it's a little community that we've built.
How
so
do you deal with those haters that tell you that something's not good if something isn't good?
I have not gotten a lot of that.
Oh,
thankfully.
Good. So that means your food's good. Subtle flex.
I will say a lot when I was first starting out, I was like, wait, I think it's good, but what if somebody else has a totally different palate and thinks it's trash, right? It's a little worrisome. Yeah. And my husband's approach is very kind of like Gordon Ramsay, where like he's not mean in any way, but he will tell me the truth and he will not sugarcoat anything. Mm-hmm. And I'll have him try stuff sometimes and he's like, this is great, or I'll say, I hope you don't post that. Don't do that one. But he'll let me know, which kind of saves me. Yeah.
Do you have a favorite recipe or meal that you like to cook?
Oh my gosh, I have a million. I'm trying to think of one. I like braises a lot because my kind of approach to the kitchen is more turn on some classical music, light some candles, pour a glass of wine or a mocktail, and enjoy yourself in the kitchen. I like braised short ribs quite a lot. My kids insist that I make mashed potatoes at least twice a week, which is crazy to me because I have to hide the potatoes. Mm-hmm. Like I have to hide them because my son will find them and he'll be like, we got potatoes today? You making potatoes tonight? And my process is not boil them and just throw them into mm-hmm. the mixer. It's like we're ricing them. We're putting them through a sieve, and mm-hmm. then we're adding our butter and our warm cream and our salt, and it's a very long process.
Now I'm hungry. I want some potatoes, too.
Yeah.
I want those potatoes.
Yeah. Yes.
Before we get into the show specifically, I'm curious, as a toddler dad, how old are your kids again?
7 and 4.
Have you ever made them something and you're like, okay, they're going to like this. You put your heart and soul into it, and then they just throw it to the ground. Is there a meal that like sticks in your head? You're like, okay, I thought they were going to like this, but they just threw it to the ground.
The reason you're asking me this, because you've probably been in this situation before. 110%, right?
Yes, yeah. Every night. Yeah. Every night.
Okay, so that's happened to me a few times, but I've figured out a trick.
Okay.
That I'm going to, okay.
Okay, I'm ready.
I rebrand anything that's new. Okay. So like in order, so last week I made a beet hummus and I used the full beetroot and the stems and the stalks and everything. And they gave it a look and I said, it's Bearcat hummus. And they already like hummus. Mm-hmm. So right away, they're big Bearcat fans. Okay. So they're willing to try it. Ravioli is called cheese pillows or cheese presents actually in my house.
Okay.
I rebrand everything. And if you give it a fun, interesting kid name,
Put Paw Patrol at least willing at the beginning to try it. Yeah.
Okay. Yes. Mickey Mouse, mac and cheese.
Okay.
Yes.
Yeah. All right.
But I've also noticed that if the plate looks pretty to them or inviting to them, they're more willing to dig in.
Okay. All right. I'll keep that in mind. That's great. That's great tip.
That's helped me a lot.
It's not broccoli.
Oh, no. That's dinosaur food in our house.
See?
Exactly.
That's brilliant.
That's Bluey's favorite snack. Try it.
Well, I think a lot of people might be curious what it is like filming one of these competition shows. Mm-hmm. You know, apparently you had to sign your life away. You can't tell us like how it ends and all that kind of stuff. What's it like?
It's very intense, but it's interesting at the same time. It was so weird because we didn't have our phone with us. So we couldn't bring our phones to set. And you would get there at 7:30 in the morning and then you do a couple cooks or interviews and it's like the confessional interview type of situation. Mm-hmm. And then you would ask one of the producers what time it was, and they would say it's 4:30. And you just think, what? How did 9 hours pass?
Yeah.
What just happened?
Where was it filmed?
Ireland.
Mm. Oh, wow.
Yeah. Yeah, so that that was interesting. That was a fun flight. And we were actually filming in the middle of Ireland. So it was like the middle of this green, lush, beautiful field. Nowhere near the city. And it was just, it was cool. It was interesting. And people are like, did you get to explore Ireland? And I'm like, no, I saw some goats out my window.
Right.
Yeah, that's about it.
I was in the studio cooking 24/7.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. That or you were in your hotel. They really didn't want you to go out and explore Ireland. I think mainly because they were in charge of your safety. So that's number one, right? Mm-hmm. And then I think the locals knew that shows were being filmed there. So they would ask.
Oh, like spoilers.
So, yes. Yeah.
How long were you there? Were you guys filming?
I can't tell you exactly, but I was there a few weeks. Long enough for my kids to be pissed.
Got it.
Yes.
So my cousin was on Kitchen Nightmares. He's a chef up in Dayton, Don Wharf. And he, I think, works for Lily's in Dayton. But I asked him about his experience. He was not, they were not remaking his kitchen. He was a chef consultant. So he was helping out. Yeah. So he wasn't on the bad portion. But
so he wasn't getting roasted?
No. Not that I could tell. I asked him about his experience, though, in working with Gordon Ramsay. And my takeaway was that it seems like he puts a lot of pressure on people, but in a good way to make them better. And he also said Gordon's like real. He's obviously funny. Mm-hmm. And he really cared about like making the restaurants better. I know that you obviously, it's a little bit of a different show because it's a competitive show for you. But is that similar to your experience with him? I guess, how was your experience with Gordon?
I will say I've never been starstruck in my entire life. Mm-hmm. But seeing him in person, it was incredible. And so I was very interested to see how he worked and what he was like working next to him. And I found him to be extremely kind and patient. And you felt like if he was cooking with you, he was on your team and he wanted you to do well. It's like if you can think of your favorite coach or favorite mentor, someone who you felt like really believed in you, that's what it was, what I took away from working with him. He was awesome. Incredible.
You didn't have an idiot sandwich moment at all?
can't tell you.
Well, I appreciate the offer. We'll find out.
Let's see here. So with this is kind of going back to your social media platform with your TV experience, how did that help you, one, make videos for social media, but then did that also help you with reality TV, kind of knowing how to be engaging on television?
Honestly, reality TV is such a different beast, and mm-hmm. it's so different from just setting up a camera or your phone.
Mm-hmm, a live shot, yeah.
And then even in local news, like mm-hmm. typically you have a live shot or you have something that you are thinking about that you mm-hmm. know, like stats or something. You're speaking about a game. You're speaking about something else. Yeah. Whereas when I first sat down in interviews for the show, they're like, are you ready to tell your story? And I thought, actually, that's a really wild concept to think about, because mm-hmm. as journalists, we're brought up to not make ourselves the part of the story ever. Mm-hmm. You're always focusing mm-hmm. on the subject. And in this, it was very weird to be the subject and have that turned around on me a little bit. It was interesting. It was good.
Had you watched the show frequently before that?
Yeah. So I knew about the show, mm-hmm. Watched it. And it's so funny because it's like an armchair cook and I was doing that too when I was watching it. I'm like, oh my gosh, why didn't you grab this ingredient? Why didn't you cook it this way? Why didn't you poach the lobster? And then when you're in that moment, I can't even describe to you like just the intensity and the focus, at least that I had, where you're just trying to, because they say you have a 20-minute cook, mm-hmm. but you start plating it 2 minutes to go. So it's really 18 minutes to make a Michelin level meal.
Now, when I watch these shows, it looks like they start plating 5 seconds before the time is out.
You cannot touch a plate until there's 2 minutes to go.
Oh, so
you can't get your plate ready. You can't put anything on the plate until there's 2 minutes to go. And you also, if you've not watched the show, there's three levels and three mm-hmm. kitchens, and the bottom is like, it looks like every tool was put into a garbage disposal. The pots are wobbly. The burners aren't very good. Mm-hmm. The ovens barely stay hot. Mm-hmm. And then the middle kitchen is like your everyday, home kitchen. Mm-hmm. And then the top is like a top level. You have every tool mm-hmm. at your disposal. It's gorgeous in there. And you also, if you're in the top kitchen, you get top pick of the ingredients mm-hmm. as well.
So you get all the perks.
Yeah.
Yes. Yes, you do. So if you are in the basement, it's like everything is working against you.
I saw your Instagram story post of you saying that. I can't even imagine trying to cook with that. I just recently got into baking.
Mm-hmm.
So I cannot even imagine having to use the bottom of the barrel, anything.
You basically just have to learn to pivot and figure out ways to have a similar outcome.
Yeah.
Without your preferred method, if that makes sense.
Yeah. So when you went and saw everything, did you kind of come up with a game plan as soon as you saw it? How did that work for you, like your mindset?
After the ingredient grab?
Yeah.
Or before? Okay. Yeah. So I would look at the ingredient, and sometimes I was like, what in the heck did I just grab? Like, how does this even work together? There's no way this works together. And I'm interested to see how they edit it, because my one cook with Gordon in the first episode is just hilarious. Like, just like the look on his face when he saw my ingredients and my look at him as he realized like what my ingredients are. Like, oh man, I'm cooked.
I'm hoping it becomes a meme then.
Yeah,
it might.
So funny.
But yeah, you try to formulate a game plan, and I don't even know how to describe it. Like, in your house, you have access. You want parsley, you got parsley. You mm-hmm. got a shallot, you got garlic. Mm-hmm. You at least have garlic powder. You mm-hmm. have something to work with, right? Whereas this, it's like, okay, you might end up with pig ears and like a half-eaten meatball. You don't know. It's wild.
So now that you have one show under your belt, would you do any other shows in the future if anyone asked?
That's a great question. I'm not sure. I would be open to it. Mm. You'd have to ask my kids, though. My four-year-old would riot over that, I think. Yeah. Yeah. I don't think he'd be very happy with me. But if it was the right situation, I would.
Yeah.
Would any shows other than cooking or just cooking?
I'm not really a reality TV show. Okay. Like, I wouldn't go live in a house with people. So, yeah, like, that's not my style. Yeah. So I just
they recently had a chef on Traitors this season, so that's why I was curious.
I heard. Yeah. Yes, I heard that.
She's doing well. She's doing well. So
yeah, I heard that was fun.
So how are you going to watch it? Like, family party? Will you be able to watch it?
Yeah,
I'm glad you brought this up. Okay, so Thursday night, Holy Grail.
Yeah.
We're going to be there. I'm going to be there a little bit earlier, about 7. And the amazing Rob Williams from Fox 19 is going to come and do a Q&A with me before the episode airs. And it's $20 at the door. And 100% of the proceeds go to Feed the Soul, which I absolutely love. They're a charity that really takes care or tries to take care of the kids in our city, giving them produce and giving them bags of food to take home if they don't have any at home, and educating them on the benefits of fruits and vegetables and just how that nourishes you and how that helps you sleep better and think better and do better in school. Like, all of that stuff is very important to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I'm really happy that they are involved too. There's going to be a signature drink. And possibly a signature menu item. So
at the Grail?
Yes.
Is it one of any of your recipes, or?
I can't tell
you. You'll have to go and see.
I'm sorry, it's very hard for me to not be able to be like, let me tell you everything.
So Thursday night watch party at the Holy Grail. That means we got to drop this episode fast, Phil.
Come on, Phil.
Yeah.
You should be editing starting now.
But if you're not going to go to the Grail, it's what, 8 p.m. Thursdays on Fox, right?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yep.
And season 5.
Mm-hmm.
Yes.
Can you believe season 5?
Wow.
Yeah. I'm not shocked. It's such a fun show. And this cast is insane and so funny. Like, there's so many personalities on this season.
Were there any, without, you know, divulging anything that's going to get you in trouble, were there any conflicts?
I'm trying
drama?
To think. I mean, I didn't have any conflicts, but
of
I also...
Of course not. No, we would not expect that.
No, good, that is not my style.
Cincinnati person. You probably said please
good
a lot.
Yes, exactly. No, we all are in a group chat together. We have the best time. The chat is always popping off every single day. And we are having a blast because now we're all just, I feel like we've all just been through like we have a trauma bond. In we're trauma bonded for life. And it's the best because I've made a lot of really good friends out of this situation. So, yeah.
All right. Well, Elise, Jesse, thank you so much for joining us today.
Thank you for having me.
If you...
One thing. She was in top 50 of content creators, too. We forgot to mention that.
This year or last year?
Yeah, this year.
Oh, yeah.
Yes. I don't
know
how...
When you said that to me, I was like, forget? What are you talking about?
How could we forget that?
We're talking about content creation. Didn't even bring it up.
I know. Well... Yeah. I mean, that's really the most prestigious honor, I think.
So.
I think in the Dave White Song Top 50.
We don't need a stamp in that one.
Well, thank you. I know a lot of people will be watching, whether they're at the Grail or not. But that sounds like a good time. So, again, thanks for joining us. And I mean, I can't say good luck because you already know what happened. But
good luck with the TV reception.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Thanks, you guys.
All right. Well, we want to thank again Elise Jesse for coming in. Busy, busy person. As her culinary career takes off.
We should probably plug her profile name in case people want to follow her. It's,
why don't you do that?
EJ's Cooking. EJSKOOKIN.
Yes. All right.
That's where you can see all of her magic.
And you got some tips how to make your...
Yes. I'm going to use it.
How to con your kids into eating the food you make.
Yeah. Snoopy broccoli is what I'm going
to
try.
That could be a whole like reader participation thing, like how to rebrand food that kids don't want to eat.
Okay.
Yeah. Right. So broccoli was dinosaur food.
Okay.
Elise mentioned. So there could be a whole list of...
Yeah.
This could be a thing.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. That could be fun. That could be fun.
So as we record this, it's Monday... After the Super Bowl, rather than a That's So Cincinnati moment to end the show here, how about we just touch on what was your favorite Super Bowl moment that had nothing to do with the game?
Okay. Which I was really happy that the Seahawks won because I grew up hating the Patriots. So I do want to throw that in there.
Which I don't get. I mean, I get, Belichick.
I have reasoning. My family's from Indiana, so I grew up a Colts fan. Bengals were always second. And now it's like Colts and Bengals tied almost for who I root for. But growing up a Colts fan, you had to root against the Patriots. There was that rivalry, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning.
Well, that's like legit. But I think some people just hate the Patriots because
they've won too much.
Yeah, they won too much. We hate people who are smug winners.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, we do. Yeah. We hate to see other people succeed.
Oh. And apparently, Tom Brady's supposed to be the nicest guy, but man, does he look smug just sitting there.
Yes.
Yeah.
Doesn't he?
Yeah, he does.
Just sitting there, he looks smug.
Yeah, and Belichick was mean to the media.
Yeah.
And those short sleeve pullovers.
So ugly, disgusting. Yeah, enough to make a man bored.
All right, now we're going to get sued. All right, so now that you got that out of your system.
Thank you. Thank you for letting me do that. I will say, I'm going to give two just because I like to be extra. One, I think the Bad Bunny halftime show was fun. Even if you don't speak Spanish, I think it was definitely a vibe. It was fun to watch. And I have it on good authority. Chase Brown from the Cincinnati Bengals says I look like Bad Bunny. Some other people say I look like Bad Bunny. Yes.
Yeah. So your doppelganger.
Yes.
You have to be
he crushed it. Yes. Okay. And on Friday, Aaron Valdez, one of our breaking news editors, messaged in this chat we have. I hope you're ready for your big Super Bowl performance this weekend. And I messaged back late last night. Are you not entertained? Like just messing around. So yeah, that's fun. And then the other one, even though I think they used AI, which I don't love for these commercials, I think the Duncan commercial with all the throwback 90s like actors and characters was really fun.
But Tom Brady was in that commercial.
He didn't look as smug though.
That's true. And he was in there very briefly. Yeah. Very briefly.
But he was smiling.
Very briefly, but a very like important like he got the girl.
Jennifer Aniston.
He was with Jennifer Aniston. Yeah,
that's fair.
Are you sure he didn't look smug? I thought he was.
it's just his face.
I think if you like could find a Tom Brady baby photo, he would probably look smug in that
resting
picture.
Smug face. But right. as a big TV fan, I loved Friends. I loved Seinfeld. Mm. It was cool to see those people looking young and being together.
What about you, Casey?
Mine is also the halftime show, but particularly the moment that there was a wedding because I'm also getting married this year. Woo-hoo! And I thought it was cool that it was a real legit wedding.
Did you know right away it was legit or did you?
No, I didn't. I thought it was just kind of, celebrating
the culture
and the party.
I think that was a rising search term last night. Yeah. Did that wedding really happen?
Yeah. Apparently, the couple had invited Bad Bunny to their wedding and he invited them to the Super Bowl and they got married there, which is really cool.
Why didn't you invite Bad Bunny to your wedding? What do you got to lose?
I
can do a great value performance.
Oh, you know what? That's
Bad
a good
Bunny's
idea.
Doppelganger.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hired.
That's funny. The great value. Bad Bunny. You know what mine was? I have become sort of a Charlie Puth fan.
I interviewed him a few years ago, too.
I remember.
Yeah.
Yeah. Not that I'm like super into his music, but if you follow him on social media,
his
professor series,
where
he kind of breaks down like why you react to music a certain way. He was talking about like why dance beat gets us going, and he compared it to the heart rate of a newborn. Like,
I think this
guy is brilliant. Even though, like, his music is like really overproduced, and but that's the whole point. That's what he does, or whatever. Some of the songs you can sing along to,
catchy.
But I thought he's going to do the national anthem. I'm thinking like, you got either got to be like soulful, or like big voice, like Whitney.
Mm-hmm.
Like to pull that off, like how can he pull that off? And then when I found out he was going to bring Kenny G with him, I was like, okay, this is either going to be the most dreadful. This is either going to like, so I was a little anxious watching because I thought this is either going to like kill his career. This is going to be the worst horrible thing ever. Or it's going to be awesome. And I thought he pulled it off.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, definitely.
I thought it was great. Pretty good.
I don't know if you saw, he had a funny video at the Super Bowl. He was with Coco Jones and Brady Carlisle, a couple other people who sang before the Super Bowl. And they were asking him for like each like specific note to like football sounds. So he would say like, okay, the referee whistle is an A, or Dak Prescott's like, here we go, is like an F going into something else. It was really funny. And Coco Jones was like, you learn something new every day.
It's funny. Yeah. He's done that like perfect pitch routine on like Fallon.
Yeah.
Where like he'll hit it, or I think maybe it was Kimmel. Like he hit a drinking glass.
Yeah.
Like,
and then turned it into a song.
And he's like, or whatever it was. Yeah. So, anyway, I do not have perfect pitch. I envy those. All right. With that, shall we wrap it up?
Yeah.
Thank you for listening to this week's episode of the That's So Cincinnati podcast, a production of the Enquirer and Cincinnati.com. Our producer today, the one, the only, Phil Didion.
If you enjoyed the podcast, please subscribe, give us a rating, and share it with a friend who loves all things Cincinnati.
Finally, if you value local journalism and haven't subscribed for full digital access to Cincinnati.com, now is a great time. Just go to Cincinnati.com and click on the subscribe button to see a special offer just for you.
Thanks again, and see you next week.